then what you start to realize, work isn't necessarily all about having these strong social relationships. It's about having enough relationship with somebody to be able to trust them. And so when you feel that someone is competent in the work that they're doing and you have a relationship with them, that's where trust comes from.
You are listening to the Culture Coach Podcast. This is the place where CEOs and people-first leaders come to boost productivity, extinguish burnout, and cultivate a vibrant culture that reflects a fully integrated mission, vision, and core values. Get ready to take your culture to the next level. I am your host, Wendy Brand. Welcome back. Today we'll be talking with my guest, Shane Spraggs. Shane's resume is chock full of accomplishments. From co-founding and serving as COO of Acromedia to overseeing studio operations at Disney Interactive, serving as vice president of product at Minga, working as the director of operations at ComicStream, and more recently, COO of Vertira. Shane joined Vertira in early 2020 to challenge and scale its operational capabilities, strengthen team building, and implement more robust, lean, agile methodologies. As COO, he transformed all solution and practice areas, operations, HR, IT, and the PMO. More recently, Shane's vast experience in project management, entrepreneurship, and team leadership has made him an in-demand speaker on productivity and engagement. Shane lives in beautiful British Columbia with his wife, two daughters, and two cats, Pancake and Bagel. I love the breakfast theme there. And his first book with Forbes Books, The Power of Remote, is co-authored with Cynthia Watson. If you're considering how you might implement a hybrid workplace or maybe create a fully remote workplace, I think you'll enjoy the insights and learnings shared by Shane. I hope you enjoy. All right, Shane, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Well, I am excited to hear about the book, talk a little bit about remote work and culture, all the things. So I'd love to hear, you know, you have the book, The Power of Remote. What inspired you to co-author this book?
Well, there it is.
Oh, all right. Nice.
At the ready. Yeah. So the background is that the company I work for was Vertira. Has been remote since 2007. And Cynthia Watson, who leads the company, has been a remote work guru for years. And I joined the company in 2020 and brought my experience as a manager and executive to the company. And the two of us decided to write this book to, at the time, at the depths of the pandemic, to share our knowledge with companies that may have been struggling. Initially, when the pandemic started, the first 3 months were probably fine for most companies. But as time went on, I personally started seeing cracks in the executive team, the management team, and the HR side of things, who mm-hmm. weren't ready to be remote. And they're very difficult functions to do remotely. I always say that when the pandemic hit, the employees were ready. Everyone just picked up their laptop and went home. For a period of time, it was very productive. It was like, okay, no one's bothering me. I can get some stuff done. But as time went on, that started to fade a bit and companies started to struggle. And we started working with Forbes on the book in 2021 and went through a number of different steps to get the book live. We suffered from the distribution challenges that were happening at the time. I'm not sure if you guys remember that, but for a while there, nothing was being. And so it did take a little longer to get out than we hoped it would have, but it was published in February 2023 last year. And I'm very proud of it. We've had some really great reviews of it. And my one fear hasn't come true, maybe, which is we have had nothing but 4 and 5 stars reviewed in Amazon. I was just worried, wake up one day and I'd be worried to see, that a bunch of ones and twos, like, well, these guys know nothing what they're talking about. It's like, I actually did pretty good. So we're, and then for a period there, it was actually a bestseller in the HR category. So very happy with how it went. And since then, we've been just pushing, trying to get the word out about remote work and productivity, and more recently, not necessarily remote, but remote first. So companies that may no longer be full-time remote, but have hybrid offices and people are going to the office to work remotely.
Yeah, I remember, as I'm sure most do, the day that, you know, we had to pack up our laptops and head home. And just like you said, like a couple months, we thought we're just moving along. Like, yes, I'm getting a lot done. Yes, my son's home. He's in his room, but I'm still productive. And then I remember my boss calling me a couple months in, and she was like, and I, you know, she was still having to go into the office. And she said, you know, we really don't know how long. I mean, we're hearing this could be a year or more. And I was just, I was like, there's no way. Like, what are you talking about? That's crazy talk. And we know now, you know, just what the length of that. And then, as you mentioned, just the transition then when companies started, you know, really asking people to come back, you know, it's time. And just the controversy that has spun up around that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know one of the challenges that, that leaders have brought up is really, you know, well, they're not, people aren't going to be as productive. The, you know, how do you keep a team together and have that cohesive team, when everyone is working remote? How have you found, or is that something that you guys address in the book?
We do address in the book, but I have a interesting story. So I worked at Disney for a number of years prior, this is a few years ago, and we had a great team. We had a lot of really strong relationships, and so much so that we kept in touch. And then around March of last year, we had a reunion. So a bunch of us got together in a local pub, and, you know, about 40 or 50 of us, and it had been, for some of them, 8 years since I've even seen them, right? And I showed up, and it was, you know, it was comfortable to talk to everybody. We just picked up exactly where we left off. And as I was leaving, I realized that the relationship I had with them is really no different than the relationship I have with the people at Vertira, many of whom I've never met in person, because we are a remote-only company. We have people spread all across Canada. And I like to say, you know, a lot of people, I don't know how tall they are, because you see just this part of them, right? And so what is it about the work and the company that allows us to have the same types of relationships? And the word relatedness popped into my head. Now, of course, I wasn't the first person to think about relatedness. And there's two gentlemen by the names of Edward Desi and Richard Ryan who worked on the concept of motivation back in the early 80s. And surprisingly, up until then, people thought motivation was extrinsic. In other words, it was applied to you. And what they suggested was that motivation was actually intrinsic and powered by three concepts: autonomy, competency, and relatedness. Now, autonomy is pretty straightforward. How much control, how much say do you have over the work you're doing? And how much pride can you take in completing the work? Competency is also really straightforward. You know, are you qualified enough or not too qualified to do the work you have to do? Is it going to push you, going to learn something? But relatedness is this weird, bit more of a nebulous concept, but it's how connected do you feel with the individuals you're working with and the work you're doing? And what I've found is that you can build relatedness. You focus on relatedness as opposed to social at cultures, then you can build a really strong team who never has to meet in person. Now, I'm not suggesting meeting in person isn't a great way to supercharge that, but I also know that it also has negative issues with meeting somebody in person. It could go both ways. I've found that with remote work, it tends to be mostly positive. And there's a couple of things that we like to do that that help for foster relatedness. The first is that if you have any team activities, it's common, team building, whatnot, social committee, whatnot stuff, it's critical you have somebody or a piece of software to facilitate. So what we saw at the start of the pandemic was companies getting together for happy hour. Well, let's get together on our Zoom calls, and we're all just going to have a drink or a snack. And what you end up with is a bunch of people sitting around waiting for someone to say something. And it's really awkward and not productive or fun at all. But if you get somebody there whose job it is to facilitate that conversation, to make sure everyone's participating, to provide a topic to work on or a theme to work through, a game or something, then you can get people working together, and then you can get people start to build relationships. The other one is another simple tool, but it's icebreakers. So at the start of long meetings, what we tend to do is take the first 5-10 minutes to have an icebreaker. And if you choose the right icebreaker, what happens is you get past the small talk and you get into a small fraction of those kinds of conversations you have once you start to know somebody. So for example, what did you have for breakfast today? That's just a simple question, right? Or what's a smell that reminds you of your childhood? Right. And there's also games you can play. One of my favorite is count to 10 as a team. Right. And so what happens in that situation is everyone has to say one number. You can't have two people talking at the same time. And as soon as that happens, you have to repeat yourself and start again. And so the team has to figure out how to count to 10, you know, each person saying, you know, one of the numbers. And just the act of doing that is fun, and it builds a bit of a social bond. And then what you start to realize that work isn't necessarily all about having these strong social relationships. It's about having enough relationship with somebody to be able to trust them. And so when you feel that someone is competent in the work that they're doing and you have a relationship with them, that's where trust comes from.
That's so great. And I love those simple, I mean, those are simple things. They don't cost any money, right?
Exactly.
But doing those things with the teams that are fully remote. The other thing I want to just make a connection here is one of the books that I read about a year ago on burnout from Christine Moslocker, and it's the Burnout Challenge. And she lists the 6 things that cause employer mismatch that cause burnout. And you mentioned 3 of those when you mentioned the relatedness. So autonomy. So when employees don't feel like they're able to move at the pace they need to and have some ownership of their work, that can cause burnout.
Yeah.
Competency, if there's a mismatch in their skills and the job they're doing over time, that can cause burnout. And then the relatedness, really that sense of belonging is a big thing for employees feeling like they have, they belong to in some way the group that they work with. And not everybody has, it's better when everyone, you know, when you have some diversity, but relatedness you can find, like you said, and just the simple things. What did you have for breakfast? You know, I mean, it doesn't matter where you come from, you're going to probably have had breakfast and you can find that common ground or just learn something new about each other. And that can
exactly
help prevent burnout as well, which is useful.
And what I found I was doing was, as soon as I stumbled across this concept, I started rehashing some of my past experiences in the office. And one of the things that I was reminded of, you know, you quite often will go as a team to lunch, right? And if you have any more than 6 people in a team, you're not talking to everybody at lunch. There's people sitting at the other end of the table. And for me, it was always, we always had a larger team around 10 to, you know, 15 people. And you'd end up, you know, stuck at one end of the table talking to this one individual the whole time. And that's a perfect example of what happens when you just get everyone on a call together. With the facilitation, you end up talking to 1 or 2 people and you don't build the relationship with the rest of the team. What happens in person, though, is there's enough of a sense of you see the other people there that, okay, we all went to lunch together. Right.
Right.
The other thing I was reminded of is that with some of the companies I work for, they have these large, you know, summer parties or yearly parties. And the intent is to, you know, celebrate something. The ones that worked the best for me were always the Secret Santa. Because you had a event to participate in together. Mm-hmm. The ones that didn't work well were the ones where we're just going to get some music going and we're, you know, maybe pay for some drinks and people are going to be able to enjoy themselves all night. But you end up with those situations, 2 groups of people, the extroverts who enjoy being out together and the extra introverts who put their time in and go home early.
Right.
Right. And you create this, you know, when you start looking for it in a company, it's not just a remote work concept.
Yeah. So you've addressed the relatedness. You've addressed the employee engagement. That's an argument that I've heard from leaders and why it wouldn't make sense to have a remote first or remote workplace at all. The other one is productivity. And so how do you address productivity in the workplace when everyone's remote?
A fantastic question. Yeah. So Productivity is a difficult one. It all depends on how you define it. So for me, productivity is accomplishing the goals of the company. So in an ideal world, you'll have a situation where, you know, the executives will establish priorities for the business for the year. Those will filter down in some fashion through either OKRs or, you know, ROCs, depending on which system you're using, or maybe just priorities if you want to use that term. And then those, they become departmental and hopefully individual, you know, goals. You get the projects and the tasks that they are doing theoretically should roll up to either a customer request or one of these things, one of these changes the company wants to make. And once you start connecting the work that's being done to those goals, now you can start to measure what productivity is. If you're measuring productivity based on how long someone sits in a chair, and this is the traditional manager working, you know, managing off the side of a desk, you know, walking around, oh, look, everyone's busy here, therefore they're being productive, then you're already doing it wrong in the office as well. So it's the same problem in the office as it is remotely. If you don't have the system set up to first filter the priorities of the company down into actionable projects and tasks, and that you can then track the progress of, you're not measuring productivity, regardless of whether you're remote or not. And doing this remotely is surprisingly easy because there's lots of good tools out there. You know, choose your poison, the sauna, Monday, workday. You know, there's all these different tools out there you can use. And from a manager, once you grasp that concept, it's actually really straightforward to keep track of whether a team member is being productive because their tasks roll up into projects. And those projects need to be completed for your department. If any of those are behind, you can say, oh, okay, our team's not being productive.
Right.
And you can drill into it. And I've also, you know, as a long-term time manager and executive, you can tell. You can really tell when someone's not busy, right? And the same tells are there remotely than as they are in person. You know, they say they will do something, they don't get it done. Or they take longer to do, you know, or they don't show up on time for things. And, you know, and it's what I find is mostly the challenge with remote is trust. It's do the executives and the managers trust their team enough to let them go do the work that they were hired to do.
Right.
And surprisingly, maybe not so surprisingly, if you set up the right systems, to run a remote company, these are the same systems that make a in-office business successful as well.
I agree. And I think the comfort level with leaders that hadn't experienced, I mean, it really is a blessing that we were forced to all go remote, because I think it has, it's bringing leaders that maybe would never have been a proponent of remote work, kind of forced them to experience it, to see. And I, you know, there's some learning curves there, in especially those that, you know, my generation and older, that it's butts in seats, you know, it's who you see present. That means they're there. If they're there at 9 o'clock, well, they're working 9 to 5 if they're there 9 to 5. And even now, that's not always the case. And so to your point, having goals and or OKRs or whatever you want to use, and because at the end of the day, that's what you should be focused on anyway. Yeah. Right.
And these all filter together here, but you know, our generation screwed it up as well with the big monolithic, you know, open space offices.
Right.
You know, Google, Apple, all these large tech companies that built these Costco sized buildings and put people in there. There was immediately, within, you know, 5 years, there's already people saying this is not the way to be productive.
Right.
It's not, you know, productivity is not a new concept. And what that was an attempt for people to have control over the people. Right. And if you were to walk into any of these larger, and Disney was one of these, and they opened up a large center in Burbank when I was working there, and you walk in there and there's desks for miles.
Right.
And you walk through and it's quiet because people have their headphones on. They're doing everything they possibly can to get a bit of focus time and not be interrupted. And you've got executives sitting next to employees.
Right.
My thing was, I want my CEO to have a desk, an office. I want them to be, I want my VPs to have a door that I have to go through to talk to, and that they have privacy to have the conversations they need to have. And they're not bothering me either. Right.
Right.
So, you know, we've been talking about the ideal office for years prior to the pandemic. And so it really comes down to just understanding the fundamentals of productivity. And one of the ones I like is the one-on-one. So for me, the one-on-one is a vital conversation that brings these three together. The manager has to make sure that the employee has the autonomy to do their work. They're competent enough to do the work that has been assigned to them. And they have relatedness with the people they're working with and the business and the work they're doing. And you do that, you know, if you a good manager doing that once a week with their staff will check in and we'll get a good sense of what's working, what's not.
Awesome. Well, I am excited for our readers to get their hands on The Power of Remote. If you could share one key thing, and you've already really shared three main components and easy things that we can do to build a culture and use the power of remote. But if there was one thing you wanted people to take away from this, what would it be?
Oh, so many. I'll give you two. From a practical standpoint, action items are key. So when you work remotely, capture every action item, every decision that comes out of meetings, every task that people have to do, and put them somewhere. You know, there's a lot of good tools out there. They doesn't have to be, you know, MS projects. It can be something as simple, you know, as Asana or Monday, and just keep track of stuff and assume that, you know, if you can have someone take responsibility for that, it's a bit, you know, that helps a team stay honest with what work they have to do. So follow up with action items. We have a process in the book we call Days of the Week, where we outline a process that, you know, here's how to keep on top of action items. The last is again, just not to be afraid of remote work. It is just another way of allowing your team to have the opportunity to live a better life. You know, so that was the big lesson the employees learned during the pandemic. I don't have to spend my entire life. This doesn't have to define me.
Right.
Right. And when you as a business can recognize that can work in tandem with your goals as a business, you can have both happy and productive and profitable teams for your business.
Wonderful. Awesome. Thank you so much, Shane. Where can my guests find you if they want to reach out and learn more?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I'm on LinkedIn, so by all means, look at me up, Shane Spraggs. Very easy to find me there. We've got Vertira.com, that's VIRTIRA.com. We sell the book on Amazon, so it's pretty easy to find Future of Productivity on Amazon.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Pleasure.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that episode. Here are my takeaways. Number one, motivation is actually intrinsic and powered by autonomy, competency, and relatedness. Number two, if you can build and focus on relatedness as opposed to social, then you can build a team that doesn't have to meet in person. Number three, team building activities benefit from having someone or a piece of software facilitate. Number four, work isn't about having a strong social relationship with someone. It's about having enough of a relationship with them that you can trust them. And when you feel like someone is competent and you have a relationship with them, you can begin to trust them. Number five, having autonomy, competency to do the work you are assigned, and relatedness to your team or coworkers are also connected to preventing burnout. Number six, going to lunch as a team is not about building relatedness, because during lunches as a team, you are rarely able to connect with more than one or two individuals. Number seven, productivity should be defined as what you achieve for the business in alignment with goals, not based on how long you are sitting in a chair. Number eight, filter the work into goals and tasks, and then you will have a way to determine if your team is being productive. Number nine, with remote work, action items are key. Capture action items and decisions, tasks, etc., track them, and follow up. Number 10, don't be afraid of remote work. Offering remote work can provide a better life for your team and in turn create a better business for you. That is it for today. Thank you so much for listening. I'm going to put Shane's information in the show notes, put a link to his book, a link to access him via his website or LinkedIn. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next week.